Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Are you making more money now than you used to? Well, how do we measure that, Adam? What about inflation? I know, right? Something we've been dealing with for quite some time. The world is as well, and we knew it would be a problem. Coming out of COVID-19, it cannot be escaped due in part to, not exclusively, but in part to the massive amount of money that was essentially created from thin air and dumped into the economy to keep things going during COVID-19. There's an opinion piece caught my eye. It's by Douglas Todd. It says, "Why Canadian wages never seem to go up." Opinion, it says. "The country's GDP may be expanding, but individual Canadians aren't getting ahead. Here are some reasons why our wage growth is projected to lag far behind citizens in other countries." So this is a startling admission buried in chart number 28 of the budget released by Canada's Liberal government. It says the chart in Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland's budget quietly acknowledges that a forecast by the OECD, a club, the commentary says, of mostly wealthy nations, that Canada will likely come in dead last in the next 4 decades in regards to GDP growth per capita. The downplayed chart, it says, one tiny aspect of the 304-page document serves as a warning that individual Canadians, compared to the citizens of 39 other economically advanced countries, will in the next decades likely suffer the lowest real growth in their wages. Now, that brings inflation, right? Because you can make all the money in the world, but if there's massive inflation, that just counteracts it. It's a wash, right? Real wage growth means that the amount of buying power your income equals grows. Want to bring onto the program to talk about this the author, David Williams, Vice President, Policy, Business Council of BC. Dave Williams, thanks for your time. Good morning.
Hi, Adam. Great to be with you.
Really liked the fact that we're seeing this topic being discussed more openly. I have to admit, I was shocked. I missed this chart when the budget came out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. It sort of snuck up on us. I guess it shouldn't have. But we talk in Canada about the economic pie, and we can argue about how to distribute the pie. Lots of legitimate debates around that. But generally, Canada does pretty well by most measures on how we distribute the pie. What the OECD report is saying is that economic pie is barely growing, and that's been true for a while. But I think what might have been a bit of a surprise is that they're saying that we're going to have the worst performing economy in per capita GDP growth for the next 10 years and for the 30 years after that. So what that means is that a young person entering the workforce today is really seeing not much growth in their average real incomes over their working life. You might be able to upskill and get a promotion or do well yourself, but on average, there's not going to be much of a tailwind for Canadians entering the workforce today.
So there's two different phenomenons in terms of growth, and I'm glad you brought that up. One of them is social mobility, i.e., you get an entry-level position, how much money are you going to make? You get a position requiring a university's degree, a master's degree, a high degree of specialization, how much money you are going to make. Everybody's expected to, usually at least, make more money as they go through their career. We're talking about the same position over time making either less or the same money in real wages instead of progress as it marches forward, making everybody better off, right?
Yeah, with any average, within any average, there are some that are doing better and there are some that do it, they're doing less well.
Okay.
And as I said earlier, we do pretty well in Canada for our distribution of income. We have a very low Gini coefficient, which is one of the ways we used to measure the income distribution. We do pretty well when you compare to other countries. A lot of U.S. narratives get imported to Canada.
Tell me about it.
They don't really apply. We do pretty well. Income inequality has been falling in Canada for about 20 years. So we do all right. But what's not going to be happening is average real incomes are going to be growing at around 0.7, 0.8% per year over the next decade and the 3 decades after that. And by the way, it's not really a spectacular forecast. I mean, that's the average that we've been doing. We've been growing at over the last business cycle since 2007. We did about 0.8. The point is that other countries are going to be doing better than us over time while Canada remains stuck in the slow lane.
What are we doing wrong? What can we change? Because I don't want to be stuck in the slow lane for 40 years. You know, 40 years for most of us, that stretches beyond the end of our earning lives. So we want to make things better now. What do we do?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I mean, a country's living standards are really determined by how well you use labor, which is your productivity.
Okay. So
it's not about how many hours we work. It's about how well we use labor. And to use labor well, when you go to work, you need to have, you know, the best capital. Mm-hmm. You need to have the best skills. You need to have the best innovation.
You got to have tools. Yeah,
R&D.
Okay.
And,
yeah, okay.
And you need to take your good ideas and you need to operate at scale.
Okay.
And we don't do that.
Oh.
Canada. We rank very poorly on all of the metrics that I just mentioned. So, you know, to turn this performance around, you know, we need to improve our labor productivity, which is how well we use labor. And you know, and in fact, the OECD, within those forecasts that we were talking about, for productivity growth over 2030 to 2060, Canada is last. It is the least productivity growth of any advanced country in the world over that 30-year period, which is quite extraordinary.
Our guest, David Williams, Vice President, Policy Business Council of BC, talking about a potential problem that we could be stuck with, unless, of course, we rethink things, we sharpen our pencils, and we find a way out of it. Vice President, Policy Business Council of BC, on why Canadian wages never seem to go up, but could if some changes were made. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think we haven't had a comprehensive tax review in Canada since the 1960s, and we really need to have a look at the efficiency of our tax system. You know, how many dollars of economic activity does it take to raise a dollar of revenue?
Mm.
We as you say, we need to sharpen our pencils and have a look at how our economy is structured, and you know, get some of the sand out of the gears of the economy. I think that's where it really. The focus needs to be.
I almost forgot. Immigration's a big part of this too, isn't it? What do we need to do there?
You know, the academic studies on immigration show that it's neither positive nor negative overall for GDP per person.
Okay.
So yes, it grows our GDP, but what does it do for GDP per person? Not much. Nothing, really. So as an economic growth strategy, you know, it doesn't give you any per capita growth. It just means that you have more people, you have a larger labor force. So I think it's certainly not sufficient to think about immigration as being, you know, this sort of magical policy that's going to lead us to higher living standards. The evidence is very clearly that it's neutral.
Wouldn't an immigrant, though, statistically speaking, be more likely to be a member of the labor force just because of the proportion of folks that already live in Canada who might be retired or babies or children? Or is it totally neutral in terms of the demographics that come in through immigration? They're equally as likely to be a senior or a child or someone who's working age.
It just doesn't affect how well we use labor, that labor productivity statistic I mentioned. It absolutely expands our labor force.
Okay.
We have more people.
Okay.
You know, but more people doesn't give you higher living standards. You know, otherwise we would have a higher standard of living here than Russia or other countries that have a higher population than us. The reason why we have a higher standard of living in Canada is because we have some capital, we have some skills, we have some innovation, R&D and scale. And we've got to use those things and we've got to grow those components.
Okay. David Williams, Vice President, Policy Business Council of BC. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks very much.
All right. Have a great day. All right, folks, back to open lines after this. 250-386-1161. Laura and Carla are on the board coming up.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, getting lots of texts at 107010. Adam, if you did an audio collection of all the craziness of this Victoria Mayor and Council, it wouldn't surprise me if Saturday Night Live picked it up and aired it. Ha 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 ha. Well, I mean, the two RTDNAs that I won nationally were for audio montage commentaries. That's what they were from. It was from, yeah, and then this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. The first one was The Troublesome Way Sir John A. Came Down, is what we called it. And it was the montage explaining what had happened with the statue of Sir John A. Macdonald being removed with almost no notice, despite being planned in advance in secret for months, if not longer, in August of 2018. And then the other one was May of 2019, and it was the audio montage. And I just called it Horse Carriage Politics because I basically articulated and laid out how there was apparently what appeared to be a political plot. And I know it sounds dumb. Like, you're like, oh, Adam, a political plot. Who are you, Alex Jones? But then people listen and they go, oh, my God, there is a political plot. Like it looks like it's actually happening, where there was a campaign that had been organized by one or more members of council using surrogates that were fed information by somebody in City Hall. Who could that be? To essentially hold up the horses as a villain that somebody would ride in on a metaphorical, of course, white horse and sleigh, and then end up running in the election. Potentially, of course. And that, of course, once people figured out what was happening, there was this big mass of hundreds of people converged on City Hall saying, ban, 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 which, you know, is sort of hilarious. And then he got really mad at me and blamed me when all I did was show people what had happened and people saw the dots. Like, I don't, like, a lot of the stuff that I do, all I do is I show you the constellations. And when you see it all together, when it can all be in your active working memory, it's undeniable. What you can see is the likely or potential explanations for this stuff. All I do is I show you all of these things happening at once, and you get it yourself. I don't have to say anything. I usually like to, though, because it makes people laugh. Let's go to Laura on open lines. Hey, Laura, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want to be really quick. Those of us who are residents of Victoria, they have their online survey, which closes on Friday.
Yep, yep.
And I would really encourage people to complete that. I just did it this morning.
Thank you.
And, you know, addressed all of, you know, what would make it good, what wouldn't make it good. And when I was filling it out, like, it was all negative. In the last 4 years, I honestly cannot pick up on any positivity that this council has done. And unfortunately, the majority of them who have their own ideology, extreme ideology vis-a-vis the minority, they've never won the fight. You know, there's no balance. There's no balance towards residents. There's no balance towards business. If you criticize the unhoused or the drug addicted, you're a poor basher. If you criticize the bike lanes for how badly they have been put in place, and I'm a bike rider. I'm not just an evil car owner. I'm a bike rider.
Thank you.
There's no balance.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one way or the other, and you're vilified if you have a dissenting opinion. But bottom line, those that live in Victoria, please fill that out.
Thank you, Laura. I totally agree. I hope as many people as possible fill it out.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good day. And I've got it on my Twitter page right now, twitter.com/Adam_Sterling. Let's see. Yeah. I've got a fair number of you who've looked at it. Not that many have engaged with it yet. See, unlike on the radio in the moment where I can't actually tell how many people out there listening technically at any given second, I can on Twitter. I have a little counter in the, you know, it's a little button. It says Tweet Analytics, and I actually see the views roll in after I tweet something. It's funny because it'll usually get like 2 retweets and 7 likes and like 4,000 impressions within the first hour or so. All of you out there are usually lurking. I just want you to know that, at least on Twitter. Let's go to Carla. Hey, Carla, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hi, Adam. It's actually Kyla, your screener.
Kyla, I'm sorry about that, Kyla. I thought you might call in over the bus thing. How you doing?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. I just wanted to commend you for continuing to be an ally to the blind community and to keep pushing this issue because it's driving me crazy.
Well, it's not fair that you get targeted like this. And the longer this drags on, the more I can't help but feel that you're being just used to fight with somebody without your consent, of course, as part of a political stupid scheme. And it just makes me angry, so I wanted to end.
Thank you so much, and I completely agree with you about the pickleball and the, you know, the MS advocate fight that she's been pitted against the pickleballers on purpose, and that's not fair either. I believe all of your, you know, what people would call conspiracy theories. I see the dots as you connect them, so I appreciate you continuing to push these issues. But yeah, no, wait, it's... I don't know if a new council... this is the problem with the floating bus stop. It's hard infrastructure. I don't know if they can be undone.
Yeah.
I don't know how... Because there should have been a second phase to the Human Rights Tribunal. There should have been... You know, yes, they ruled in our favor. Yes, that means that there should be reparations. Some kind of compensation for being discriminated against. And that hasn't gone ahead yet, as far as I know. Or nothing concrete has been... and I say concrete jokingly because the bus stops are made of concrete, and I don't know, short of pulling them out and putting them back to the way they were, I don't know what the fair and just way to move forward is.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can promise you this, Kyla, I'm never going to stop fighting. So if me and you get defeated, we get defeated together, okay?
Thank you so much for continuing to push this. And I also, I just wanted to bring up the gas tax thing. I am not a driver, but the rest of my family are. And when I have to use taxis, when I have to buy a coach ticket, when I have to purchase a BC Ferries fare, I'm being punished too. And all of my grocery bills are going up. And it's interesting that the only way for anybody to get a rebate around here is to be a customer of ICBC. And I don't think that's necessarily fair. I have a limited income.
Yeah.
And I just, it just drives me crazy the way I want somebody to cut back these gas taxes. There's absolutely no need for them to be being collected while our economy is being held hostage. We absolutely, and that last story about, you know, how we're going to be ending debt last for GDP.
Yeah, that's kind of bleak.
It is, because we're not tapping into our natural resources like liquefied natural gas. I know everyone says LNG, they equate it with oil, and any carbon is a bad carbon. But, you know, we need to be bringing out our resources onto the world stage. And I'm sorry if people are going to be mad at me for saying that, but the only way we're going to bring our economy. I don't like the fact that we have to sit in economic and poverty just because we take a holier-than-thou, moral, green stance. We have a healthy economy going forward.
Kyla, I appreciate the call as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great day. Bye now. Yeah, Kyla has vision issues, as you heard, and she's one of the people who actually experiences that problem with the floating bus stops. You can't hear the bike coming, so you have to sort of stand there and hope that the cyclist sees you and hope that the cyclist knows that you have the right of way in the crosswalk that crosses the bike lane itself. And every single time you step out, it's that wincing feeling that a bike's going to plow right into you because they don't want to lose their momentum. They got somewhere to be, especially with the e-bikes. They get going pretty good clip on those things. And that's just life for her now. Like, really? Was that the best that we could do? See, the problem is that an area with bus stops as densely packed as they were on Pandora was not an ideal street for the bike lane. And the bike lane on the right side of the street actually never made sense for Pandora. You know why the bike lane is on the right-hand side of the street on Pandora? I think the north side of the street. Because it's viewable in pictures beside the flagpole and the wonderful rainbow crosswalk outside Victoria City Hall. Victoria City Hall, when Lisa Helps came into power, did not have a wonderful, clean, all-ages, all-ability cycling network visible literally out the front door of the bloody building. There was one blemish on that, though, that would ruin that whole perfect, clean, green, future utopia picture that somebody's going to clip to their resume, because that's really all we are, it feels like, some days. You know what that blemish was? The statue of our evil Prime Minister, Sir John A. Macdonald. Except now it's in a box at a city facility within the city limits. People are like, Adam, where is it? Where is it? I know where it is. It's not that big of a deal. And it's actually not the only colonial symbol that may have been removed from public display and is currently sitting in a padlocked box in a dimly lit space right now. What am I talking about? You'll see. I have less than a minute left before we need to take a break for the news. Coming up after the news, I do have a lot more time for open lines, though. So I'm looking forward to conversations. I've got Don on the board, I've got Jeet on the board, and I've got Martin on the board. So you can call and you can discuss anything that we've discussed on the show lately. And I've had people ask me, Adam, what about the politicians? Are you going to invite them? Can they call in? Yeah, they can call in. We had it happen all the time. In fact, we had the mayor of Langford and the mayor of Saanich call into the show last Friday, and they wanted to weigh in on a story that we just had. So we were happy to talk to them. Like, I encourage that. Like, no, please don't make me relevant. I want them to call into my show. I want people to say, wow, did you hear what the mayor, this person said on Adam Sterling's show the other day, or what this politician said, or that one? Yeah, absolutely. You can all give me a call. And you don't have to be, you know, a big, huge luminary to do it either. We speak with ordinary folks, and we speak with some of the most powerful people in the city and in the country as well. And we're all equals on the open lines. Except for me, I have a button that makes people disappear. You know, somebody's got to keep this thing moving along. And I carry that heavy burden. And some days, I even enjoy it a little bit. Quick break back after this.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
You know, every so often I'll meet somebody new or somebody who's newly come to the city who, you know, hasn't been following all this weirdness. And I'll be just telling them these anecdotes and they'll be looking at me like I'm joking, like I'm pulling their leg. Like you know, that didn't really happen, right? Like bit by bit, like against blind pedestrians, the Human Rights Tribunal, and it's because of the floating bus stops issue. And, you know, and I shouldn't laugh because it's horrible. It's my defense mechanism kicking in. When like how horrible that we have a municipal government that did that, and they used their own money to pay their lawyer to go to the Human Rights Tribunal for years, and they won. They got told that they were right. And in the end, everybody just sort of shrugged and went, oh, well. The bike lane shouldn't have been put in the same place that the bus needed to stop. That's the long and the short of it. The bike lane should have been on the other side of the road. It could have been on the other side of the road, the south side of the road, but then there were other issues. And let's be honest, blind people are not very high on the list of priorities if you're relying on cyclists, because you can't ride a bike if you're blind. You need to be able to see where you're going. So you're not really high up on the list of people that, you know, the bike crowd cares votes or not. And I'm sorry to be cynical like that, but it's true. You know, if you're trying to build a cycling coalition to modify public policy, what is the one group who you don't care at all what they think? Well, it's the ones that are blind and can't ride a bike, isn't it? Every other group you might convert. Every other group might come on board. They're the one group that can't be included. So why would you put them into your political calculus? See, the problem is that what happens here in this city looks like insanity often until you start thinking like a cold, calculating sociopath. And then suddenly a bunch of things lock into perfect focus and make perfect sense. And it's deeply, deeply disturbing because it does explain a lot of things. And we don't want to believe that somebody who thinks that way has been in charge, or people, plural, who think that way, have been in charge for the past few years. But wouldn't that make a lot of things make sense? Again, the pickleballers with Susan Simmons. You know, Susan has multiple sclerosis. She deals with fatigue. She manages any number of things. And, you know, she doesn't need me to fight for her. She is tough as nails. And I admire the hell out of Susan Simmons. But Susan Simmons told me in January that when she came forward and told her story about Ben Isett breaking the law, violating her privacy rights, using his powers at the city of Victoria, his access to records, and breaching her privacy. And he apologized for it, but like Susan said, you know, if you make this public, he's going to do something to me. He's going to retaliate. The city's going to retaliate because they'll be embarrassed over this. And she is in the Times columnist in that parking lot talking about how pickleballers have just been given access to the parking lot. They're painting the bloody lines to the pickleball courts right now. Like it's happening. This is real. And we're supposed to believe that that's a coincidence. 4 months ago, Susan Simmons says, they're going to retaliate against me. 4 months later, the parking lot that's the subject of the human rights complaint that she and others are involved with is suddenly getting pickleballers. What a horrible, horrible place we live in if that's what's happening. Like, I just, how do they sleep at night? How do their supporters sleep at night? Like, really? Like, I just, like, and all of this stuff is supposedly about being morally good. Isn't that what progress is supposed to be? We're going to be fairer, more inclusive, more equitable. Except if you're a disabled woman that makes us look bad, in which case, we're going to take your parking lot and give it to the pickleball crowd. Because we know nobody's going to stop us. I refuse to live in a community like that. I just, like, no. There is no good that could be offered by a mind that would do that, that counterbalances that. I'm sorry. Because once they do that to those vulnerable populations, they will do anything to you. This has to be stopped. It just does. It's ridiculous. Should have stopped a long time ago. But it won't. We just live with it for another 5 months and 3 days, I guess. Let's go to Don. Hey, Don. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Love your passion there, Adam. Good on you.
It's guilt. I feel guilty. I feel like if Susan... No, here's the thing, Don. I feel guilty. I feel like maybe if Susan had shut up and stayed quiet, then maybe she wouldn't have lost her parking lot. That's what I'm worrying about right now. I can't prove it. I don't know if that's the case, but I'm feeling guilty because I don't want anybody to come to harm because they stand up to the city. Sure, the city's throwing everything they have at me. I signed up for it. That's the job. But when I see Susan getting hurt, when I see other people getting hurt, and it's only been 4 months since she said they're going to retaliate if we do this, I can't help but feel it.
I would say I have different morals than the mayor and most of that city council, simply put. They're a breed of their own, and you question how they can sleep at night. I think it's a wasted concern. They are, what would you say, far too gone to live in a democracy. They take advantage of the democracy, as far as I can make out, Adam. But I was going to say thank you for allowing David Williams, the guest, to point out Canadians just how dismal the government policies are when it comes to the economy. He did mention the healthcare system in Canada, which is nowhere near the top, or the affordability on the housing. I mean, Canada is not a very welcoming place if you're, you know, trying to buy a home and so on and so forth. And the higher interest rates are just getting going. So I guess I'm a conservative, but on the other hand, I can be just as strong as an NDP or two, Adam. I look for the cream of the crop, no matter what the party is. I think more and more of the left, are they like to say the progressives, it's kind of like a self-appointment, which is kind of funny, but they are starting to feel a little queasy or greasy because some of the government policies are starting to affect them directly. And the problem with the agenda for the left can't stand the open market nor open free speech. Prime Minister Trudeau, they're arguing back in Ottawa right now on Bill C-11, which is going to basically filter the content of the Internet. I mean, I know that Facebook has filtered some of my content, YouTube, and then Elon Musk, who's got way too much money for an individual, he basically supports what he would consider, I'm not saying Elon's right, but he does put his money where his mind is. He wants free speech. And, of course, all the, what would you say, Democrats and the socialists, put, you know, they light their hair on fire as soon as you mention the word Trump. Mm-hmm. Actually, Trump's not the issue. It's more about the freedoms that I would say North America offers, or used to offer. And now we're at a point where you've got so many of the left, who they're feeling awkward because a lot of their policies, it's basically democracy is getting in the way, free speech is getting in the way, the rule of law is getting in the way, let's do away with it, and then we don't have to put up with these deplorables. I just don't think that's the right way to go. For me, democracy, I am prepared to listen to someone who I don't really care for, state facts, not facts, but state an opinion that just sets me over the top, and then I try to connect with them. This notion that we can just dispel the people we don't care for or the opinions we don't care for with the stroke of a pen doesn't mean it's going to go away. It only festers. And when we look down south there between the Democrats and the Republicans, it's almost like a 50-50 say. So if you trash talk, say, Trump, you're trash talking 50% of the American mindset. And if you trash President Joe Biden right now, I mean, you're trashing 50% of that population. I do find it interesting, getting back to David Williams, the guest there, It's interesting that the mainstream media, it's news to them. That's concerning because it almost seems like the news isn't able to speak for itself now, Adam, and I do get concerned. I would say for free speech, it's kind of like you're either pregnant or you're not. This notion you can filter out opinions or facts or, you know, stitch things together and so on and so forth, that's manipulation. And the only way I would say people are manipulated is by not knowing you're manipulated. And I would say you've done an excellent job exposing the mayor and council as far as their tool of manipulation. But you expose it. Now the decision is up to the people to either continue that agenda or say, no, we don't want manipulation. We want to be represented by fact and truth and the democracy that so many of the people fought for in Canada.
Well, unless they find a way to rig the election, too. And that's one other thing I'm worried about. Jeff Young's already accused Sarah Potts of thinking about it a year ago. And what if they try? What if they succeed? What do we do then?
Well, I think it's a foregone conclusion that they need that manipulation, basically of counting votes, to maintain this ideology that cringes at truth and democracy, the rule of law, and so on and so forth, Adam. So as I say, you know, to the left, and I voted left in the past, you've got to step up because you're losing the identity of the good things that the NDP stood for. And that bothers me because the NDP has done great work. I mean, let's face it, if the capitalists had this country, I mean, it would not be good. But the exact opposite is true. Many of the callers want balance. I want balance. And we seem to be challenged that we can't rein these people in immediately when they step out of line. I think that needs to be changed, Adam, because so many people are throwing their hands up and saying, you know, what's the use? I will say that this survey, I think you posted it on Twitter. I haven't looked at it yet.
Well, you live in Saanich, right? So it's a Victoria survey. So it's just for people who live in Victoria.
I'm speaking to, well, Saanich does surveys too.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's almost like a survey of condolence. And what I'm trying to say is...
A survey of condolence.
Well, no, it is, Adam, because, I mean, when you've got the Friends of Beacon Apart going out, putting the time and effort in to correct, I think it was around 30,000 signatures, and basically what? NDP snubbed it. I mean, that's not the message to the people. I mean, it didn't really account for it. Now the government, the BC government, are basically appealing the decision.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Apart.
Yeah, okay? I forgot about that.
And when it comes to health care, I'll just finish here, Adam. I appreciate, you know, offering you this time.
Yeah.
But when it comes to health care, the NDP, like Premier Horgan, he has spent millions and millions and millions of dollars fighting the open market when it comes to health care. You see, it's not for the people. It's about his ideology. And the thing that rubs me the wrong way is some of Don's money is fighting against what I think would help so many of the people that are suffering now in the lineup for health care. I just don't see it as being fair. So I would say to the left, you can't be, you're either pregnant or you're not. You're either a socialist or you're not. And frankly, I think we've gone too far, Adam. I do.
Well, we'll find out one way or the other. The other side would say they haven't gone far enough. All I want is just to not have blind people get picked on and not have disability advocates get picked on and to not be set against each other. Like that sounds like some sort of cruel cartoon villainy. Like it does. It needs to end and it should have never happened in the first place. And the fact that it's plausible, the fact that we're not sure is the worst part of all this. And I really don't know. It is, I think, the simplest way to explain all the weirdness that we're seeing. Just throw morality out the window, care only about optics, and ask yourself, if I was a sociopath, how would I do this? And then look at what they ended up doing and ask yourself if that's what happened or if it better approximates what happened than what we actually saw take place. And you'll be uncomfortable with the answers. You will. All right, quick break. Back after this.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, we're back on the air here at CFAX 1070, 250-386-1161. Jeet's up next. Hey, Jeet, welcome to Open Lines. Go ahead.
Hey, Adam. Your last caller made some good points. But, you know, it's just like me or everybody else. I mean, the mayor's not doing nothing wrong. She's not breaking the law, right?
Well, no. The city did break the law. The city did break the law, Jeet. They broke the law in terms of the Privacy Act multiple times. Ben Isett did it, but the city's responsible collectively for it because the city has a responsibility to stop it from happening again. And it did happen again. And then it happened again. And then it happened again.
Okay, but if you do that...
And we don't know what else is going on behind the scenes, Jeet. Do not say they are innocent because we cannot establish that at this time.
I think that they're not doing a good job. Don't get me wrong.
No, they are breaking the law. We caught them breaking the law. They did nothing about it publicly, but we caught them.
But in the day, their workplace, I mean, some bosses, who's ever in charge of them, should get fired, right? Any other workplace, that would happen. But, you know, but end of the day, you know, she is doing what her voters want her doing.
No, so she isn't. She's not. No. That's a trick. That's a trick. They don't want her breaking the law. They don't want the city breaking the law. They don't want the city discriminating against blind pedestrians. They don't want disabled people pitted against pickleballers. Like, progressives are not cartoon villains. Progressives are just people who have ideas. They want to change things. They want to make things better. Progressives have been tricked into backing someone who does not actually share their views but has a reasonable approximation of that facade in public, I think.
So, Adam, you know that time you're talking about that... you know, the 10 city people, how dangerous they were at the beginning of the pandemic or during, and only the council knew about it. But did the police know, too?
Yeah, of course the police knew about it. They got called 4,000 times.
Publicly.
What?
Why didn't the police say anything publicly?
Because council threatened their budget.
Oh, give me a break, man.
That's true. I've got them on tape.
Well,
like it sounds like a cartoon villainy nonsense, but it happened. You live in a city where the police knew the secret and the truth of the parks, but they couldn't speak out because Ben Isett said that their communications were already too political, and he threatened them openly at the table multiple times. But the police issued press releases. In fact, some of the mayor's slimy friends tried to make it look like the police department was basically making it up or skewing the numbers with anecdotal evidence. There was a piece floating around saying, "Don't rely on anecdotal evidence," even though everybody bloody knew it was real, but at that point, nobody seemed to care about what was true.
And some people got hurt over that. And that's what, I can't believe the police is someone that...
They knew. It's real. You have to believe it, G. See, that's the problem. That's like, people should be outraged.
Well, look at Trump. He knew about the COVID. He lied to the public at the beginning, right? I was pretty mad about that, too. The U.S. never... You know, I always thought U.S. protected us, and they had lied all right, and that was really... Someone knew in the White House, too, COVID was very dangerous at the beginning, right?
Okay,
Well, it's the same thing, right?
I don't think it's the same thing, They said a lot. Okay. They issued like 500 press releases. Every time somebody else got stabbed, a press release would come out. Council hated it. Council threatened them openly at the table with their budget for it, just the same way Susan Simmons was worried that she might get threatened as well. And lo and behold, look at what happened to her with the pickleball thing. No, like, we live in a city where the easiest way to explain what happens is there is a vindictive city hall that punishes anybody who steps out of line politically, and we shouldn't be forced to live in a society like that. It feels like we have nothing to lose in terms of our governance if this is the only thing that awaits us. More of this. I refuse to accept it. I simply won't.
Well, the next elections are here, so maybe the new people could...
Yeah, unless they find a way to rig those too. Yeah, they're talking about that today. The rules for the election. Do we trust those? Why? We don't trust anything that they do because they consistently show us why we shouldn't.
Well, who votes more? It's more the bike people vote.
Well, the bike people are scared, and they're told they're going to get hit by cars, and they're told that everybody wants to take away their bike lanes that don't really work, so they don't know what they're doing. They don't realize that they're getting used to literally support discrimination against blind people. They don't realize it, but they are.
I know.
I'm sorry. And I'm sorry I yelled at you, Jeet. I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay, man. But, hey, where's my tennis courts in Langford? I was talking to Cedar Rec Center secretary. She goes, "Gee, are you the one that phones into Adam?"
She knew
this guy, city councilor in Langford, phoned back and said, "We have tennis courts in Langford." I'm like, "Where?"
Yeah, it was Lanny Seaton called in. I can't remember where he said, but they're there.
Oh, man. Anyway, take care.
All right. Have a good day, G. I'm sorry. I'm looking for a sound clip while I have these conversations. I can't find it in my archive because I've got too many clips open and too many things open at the same time. I've got multiple years open right now. 250-386-1161. Because I've got a clip that I want to play, and it's of council, and it's Stephen Andrews standing up and saying, "We're violating disabled people's rights with what we're doing in Beacon Hill Park." And then he says the legal analysis of it, and both Loveday and Helps jump in and say, "Wow, that was supposed to be secret information from our lawyer, and you just disclosed it." Now, Andrew said that he didn't disclose any secret thing. He said that he performed his own legal analysis and just from widely available information. But both Loveday and Helps jump in and they shut him up and try to stop him at the table. It happened July 15th. That's what it was. It was on July 15th it happened. And that's the Beacon Hill Park pickleball situation. So, like, is the city destined to lose yet again at the Human Rights Tribunal? What have they been told? We had a hint of it, a glint of it at the council table, and it looked to me like the city was going to end up discriminating against disabled people yet again and had been told that. We don't know that for sure, though, but it wouldn't surprise me because that's what they do. The biggest trick they ever pulled was convincing good, honest progressives in this city who want to see positive change and inclusion that they were one of them. They are not, and they never were. And all you have to do is look a little bit below the surface, and you end up seeing who gets chewed up in all these machinations. Good progressives wouldn't do that. Legitimate progressives would. Like, really? No, it just wouldn't happen. And yet it is. Let's go to Martin. Martin, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, just another day. What's up?
Oh, I talked to you a little while ago about North Saanich And I'm
I'm sorry. I didn't look into that for you. I totally forgot. I know exactly what you're going to talk about right now. I apologize. I didn't get a chance to look into that, Martin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sending you something, and I looked at it, a few hundred pages, so I'm trying to bring it down to a summary so you can look at it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't do that. I know I said I would. I'm actually going away next week for a few days, Martin, so I can't take on anything else right this second. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. This saga has been going on for a while. I'm sure it will continue much longer.
Yeah.
I've listened to about the corruption in the city and whatnot. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if one of the council members is under investigation, that particular council member or whoever is under investigation cannot make a decision on a file that she or he is under investigation for. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I think it's more complicated than that. But, you know, ISIT was under investigation for the privacy breach stuff multiple times, and nobody even heard about it until we made all of the multiple investigations public, and that was in January of this year. But there was no indication to the public that all this stuff was happening. He just sort of, I guess, was told behind the scenes, and they said, don't do it again, and then he did it again, and then they said, don't do it again, and then he did it again. and we, I hope that a stop has been put to it now, because we reported on it in January. He publicly apologized in a letter to the editor in the Times Colonist. Was that the end of January? I think it was around there. I can't remember the exact day, but that was just one instance. Like, who knows what else is going on behind the scenes that we haven't been able to prove yet?
It's what I'm referring to is the mayor, Jeff Orr, the mayor of North Saanich, actually in a public meeting said, "Oh yeah, how dare these people investigating the council members, and we are very hardworking, so on and so forth." And they send to the ombudsman, and we know there is an investigation, right in a public meeting, and then turns around.
Yeah, I just, you have to be really careful.
Under investigation.
Yeah, but you have to be really careful. Like, if you got that wrong, you get sued. So, like, you have to be really careful with details and stuff like that. So I don't actually know the details there, Martin. I told you I hadn't looked into it yet, so I can't talk about it. So we're not going to talk about it. But there's anything else that you want to talk about. I haven't discussed it on the show, Martin, but I haven't discussed it on the show yet. You know the rules. All right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Enough.
So thank you.
All right. You're have a good time. When you get back,
again,
we'll talk some more.
Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. I don't like how it's going so far. Here's the thing, folks. I can look into something, but like I don't have the ability to perform vast investigations on every single one of the 13 municipalities. I just don't. I'm very sorry. And I don't want to treat anybody unfairly, because I don't want to try to get into a debate or a discussion about something that I know literally nothing about. Because if the other person gets it totally wrong, I won't know that. And that's not really fair to them. Like, everything that I discuss on the show, there's a huge amount of research. It's like an iceberg. The show is the tip of the iceberg. The research is the rest of it that happens beforehand. And if I don't know about something, I generally will say, I don't know about this, or we just won't talk about it on the show. I have no idea what's happening in that municipality. I want to apologize if anybody was just inaccurately described. And I have to leave it at that point. All right, quick break. We're back after this.